Blog Talk Radio.
You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Got to have personal responsibility, political accountability, and corporate culpability.
Get up, 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 get up.
We must eliminate poverty. I don't care what color the person, a child.
See a glass half empty, but our optimists see a glass half full. Are we locked into regressive mentality by chains unseen? If you try to fail and then succeed, which have you done? Do you ask enough questions or do you settle for what you know? The only questions that really matter are the ones you ask yourself. Welcome to Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think.
I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Thank you for tuning in to this tonight's special edition Mental Dialogue Talk Show, as we normally do this every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but every now and then there's an opportunity to reach out to the truth seekers based on what's going on out this past week. Has been somewhat, I guess, tumultuous as I watch it in the media, the situation up in Charlottesville. And the question that we have for our audience, listening audience tonight is, what really happened in Charlottesville? The situation up in Charlottesville, Virginia. You definitely will have to be living under a rock about it. And so, as always, a lot of times in Mental Dialogue, we quite often stay away from the hot-button item that's out there that needs to be a place of solace for those who consider themselves truth seekers, thinkers, and intelligent, and just kind of get out of the fray. Something's going on, we'll still deal with things that matter to our community, but not necessarily the hot-button item. But when we choose to do it, it's because I'm hoping to present a voice that I'm not hearing in the current media, whatever the situation may be. And of course, this situation, obviously, the Charlottesville riots, I guess that's what they're being called. But to do so, I actually brought on, I have a couple of special guests on with me this evening. I wanted to highlight their returning guests to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. First, I'll start with a queen that I follow vividly on social media, and will admit to yourself, Maria Laura, as well as my other guest, Justice Callow Rain, both the guests I follow very closely, and I will tell you quite often, the information that I gather quite often comes from following you guys, because I seek out that different type of information, and that's what y'all are bringing to the table. And we're also fortunate enough to bring on Brother Shelly Winters, who's been a guest on the show many times. He's pretty regular guest to the show, but we'll start with you, Maria. Again, thank you for coming on this evening. If you will, Maria, just give a little bit of your background, and if you will, just even touch on, in a sense, if you don't mind, kind of where you stand politically, because I feel like I'm bringing different viewpoints to this show, and that's what's going to make this different from what maybe people are hearing out there currently in the media. So if you will, Maria, say hello to the Truth Seekers, give a little background, and we'll move to Justice after you.
Okay, perfect. Well, first off, thank you so much, Montoya, for having us on the show. I'm definitely looking forward to the discussion. So just a little bit about me. I'm the owner and founder of Management 24, which is a business consulting firm. I managed Dr. Boyce Watkins' career for 3.5 years. I'm the co-owner of the Blackwell Food Camp and also the owner of idatedaily.com, which is a dating and relationship news and blog website. So where I stand politically, it's funny because I actually am very apolitical. My ideology as it pertains to American politics is very much aligned with Lucy Parsons, who was considered an anarchist. And I know anarchy is kind of it's like a dirty word, but anyway, I am very much aligned with her ideology, and she famously quoted, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but she said, in so many words, that, you know, you would be foolish to think that the rich will allow you to vote them out of their wealth. And again, I'm definitely paraphrasing there, but she has made some very famous quotes with regard to just how corrupt and, unreliable the system is, the system of American politics, that is. So as it relates to Charlottesville, I mean, I look at this in some ways very similar to, well, I'm not going to compare it to the so-called riot in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but just with regard to how there has been this dismissal of this being a domestic terrorist attack, I do relate it to the so-called riot of the 1920s in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I relate so-called riot to that one in that people are saying that it's not a domestic terrorist attack. It's just, you know, protesters and rioters, and it just happened to turn violent.
I respect that, and we'll get into that. We'll definitely get into that as we go along.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and get the other guests introduced. Justice, if you will, brother, same thing. Quick background and any reference to where you stand politically. Again, I just want people to hear we're bringing different viewpoints to the table before we get into the discussion. We only got a quick hour, so we're going to definitely hit it hard. No commercials tonight. Go ahead, Justice. What you got?
All right, great. I'm calling in from Seattle, Washington. My name is Justice Kayla Rain. I'm the founder of The Rain Group, which is a executive coaching company for executive champions, high impact individuals. I'm also founding a community sourced, owned, and benefiting entertainment company because I really understand that media plays such an important role in how we take in our information and how we develop our culture. And I'm the co-founder of Proper Groove, which is a 501c3 out here that helps to decrease sexual and bias-based violence in our nighttime and our social spaces. My background is I grew up very, very conservative. I think both my family and I had the notion that I was going to end up running for office on the Republican ticket. And since then, I think in large part because of my identity being a gender nonconforming, non-heterosexual male, I've had to kind of examine my allegiance to parties. Right now, I would not consider myself a Republican or a Democrat. I absolutely think that the two-party system is part of the problem that we face. I just think of myself as a realist who actually believes that in people, human beings, having the power to govern ourselves.
We have on again returning guest, none other than ShellyWinters.com. Brother, if you will, say hello, give a quick background, and just make a reference to where you stand politically.
Shelly Winter, we're on a website, ShellyWinters.com. Please visit it. Tell me what you think. A political strategist, my politics are what I call reason and logic. And it just tends to be more conservative.
Hey, I love it. Well, let's go ahead and get into this thing. Keep the speakers out there listening, waiting, and definitely want to promote this podcast again, as I said at the beginning. Only want to touch this so we can offer different viewpoints, and I think we can do that. So, Maria, we'll actually go back with you because I know you only have 30 minutes with us, and so we're going to definitely go ahead and get started with you. And so the question that I asked, as I always do the shows in the form of a question, as I go by Black Socrates, we take this credit, really happened in Charlottesville. Importantly, I think the question for specifically the African-American community in dealing with that is, in my opinion, is should we care? Now, let me say this, too, before doing this show so everybody hears this. I will tell you I haven't followed any media TV coverage of this, and again, I'm relying on you guys to bring the perspective, but I'll say part of the reason I haven't covered it is because in my mind, there is a focus American community that, in my mind, sometimes these situations, while important on one hand, always take us off course. So I choose to, in a sense, expose myself to all media that I should be fearful and frustrated with the situation. That emotion, it gets me off course. I wanted to kind of lay that out before people think I'm well-versed and have done it. Because you guys, I've been using your verbiage. But if you will, Maria, should we be concerned more so than what actually happened? I feel like that has probably been covered for the last few days. I don't want to happen as much as how concerned with the situation in your.
Okay, yes. And just so you know, I think I got your question. For some reason, I couldn't hear you that well. But I believe the question was, should we care about what has happened in Charlottesville? And quite honestly, in my opinion, I don't think that we should care, only because it's something that has been occurring for quite a long time now that we've been here. And by saying that I don't think we should care, that doesn't mean, obviously, that I'm advocating for the promotion of, you know, the Confederacy or the support of the Confederacy. But what I mean by we shouldn't care is that I do think that we should focus our attention on more important matters, such as, you know, getting allies to kind of help us get out of this, this system of oppression that we have been in since we've been in this nation. This country was not founded on principles of treating black people as human beings. I mean, we weren't even considered human for quite some time while we were here. So until we can actually dismantle this government and the way that it is, the way that it oppresses people of color in particular, I don't think that we should necessarily care about these riots. I do think that these are somewhat of a distraction from a bigger issue, which is to really dismantle systemic racism as a whole. And that starts with first going after the U.S. government for reparations. And when I say reparations, I'm not talking about cutting a check to black people. Reparations is, it can be done in a number of ways. We could, you know, not have taxes taken from us, especially considering how poorly we're treated in this country anyway. We could forego paying taxes. We could have money funneled into HBCU. There are many ways in which one can give reparations, and passing out checks to just black people in general is not one of them, and probably not the most effective way. So, no, I don't think that we should necessarily care so much about this this incident. I think that we should keep our heads down, form some alliances outside of this country, and also respect those allies within this country that we have, and work collectively to dismantle the system of oppression, because although it's affecting us now, it's just a matter of time before the system affects everyone, starting with the poor. And there are poor white, black, brown, yellow, and so on and so forth. So we should, as a human race, collectively work together to dismantle this oppressive system.
Hey, respects. Justice, any that we proposed today was what really, as I said, I'd rather us in this short hour contend with, should we be concerned, particularly as an advocate, in a sense, for a much, I wanted to hear your thoughts on should we.
Okay, I think I also got the question that was going in and out. I think that we should be concerned. I do agree that the type of concern that we need to have needs to be, I think, focused. So we talked earlier about having the allies be part of it. Well, what has been the history of things is that the general white population doesn't really care about what happens to people of color, and specifically black people, until something horrendous happens. And so we need situations like this to wake up our white allies, quote-unquote possible allies. We also needed to see who our allies are, because a lot of people right now want to say that they are allies, but they don't do anything to actually move any kind of policy forward. They don't do anything to invest in black and POC businesses. They don't do anything to actually take a look at what they're doing, what's in their home, what kind of friends that they have, what kind of toys that they are bringing in, and what they're watching on TV. They're very comfortable. And so we need these kind of shocking situations to wake people up out of that comfort zone and take a look at it. And the other part of this is that many of us have been singing the warning signs from Obama's first campaign run and saying, hey, do you guys understand what's happening? We're not post-racial. This is actually going to be a big pushback, like it always happens anytime black people fight, wrestle their rights away from the powered majority. There's going to be a significant pushback. And we immediately saw that during the election. We saw that during the Tea Party. And then people were like, oh, no, it's taxes. But we knew what the motivation was behind it. And then we're seeing it again during the second Obama campaign. And we see it now. This Trump campaign was built out of everything he's done has been anti-Obama. He's like, I'm going to roll back everything Obama did. That's what he's run on. That's what he has tried to do. And because of his rhetoric, he's enforced these folks to come out of the woodwork. And now the challenge that I'm having is that people, the general population, are getting to point at these neo-Nazis and distance themselves from taking a look at their own selves and seeing how they contribute to the system of white supremacy that is in every institution, in everything that we can think about this country being created on.
Hey, respect it. All right. Brother Winters, Shelly Winters, you're up. Your thoughts, should we be concerned about what happened in Charlottesville, particularly to our community once again? I hope I'm not still going in and out for everyone. I hear each of you clearly, so I hope that's okay. Cool, good stuff. All right, brother. Yeah, what's your thoughts, brother?
Good evening. Thanks for having me, Montoya. I be honest with you, Trump. I like Trump from day one because he represented what they weren't, and to me, he represented the fight against the elites. The elite politicians, Democrat and Republican, the elite media, the elites, the people who think they're so smart, yet we still have all these problems in our community. The people who think they're so smart on foreign policy that they know so much that they just disrupt and destroy whole nation states. These are the people that Trump was against and was against him, and so I liked him. In the case of what's going on right now, you ask, should we be there? Absolutely not. We should not be there. This is not a fight that has anything to do with black people. The neo-Nazi white supremacists that were walking with their tiki torches were yelling about Jews. They were yelling about not losing their land, that they were not going to lose their land. Trust me when I tell you, black people had nothing to do with that. They are in their minds, we are no threat to anything that these people have or want or don't have and do want. And so this fight is between poor white trash and their elite brothers at the top, the governments, the businesses, the corporations, the politicians. This is a fight between them. And my contention is that let them fight it out. And while they're fighting it out, Sun Tzu says, when your enemy is in disarray, you load up on your resources. You don't take the fight to them while they're in disarray. You load up on your resources and prepare to battle a weaker enemy. And so there's no reason for us to be in this fight. This fight is between them. Neo-Nazis fought against Intifada and far-left violent people and violence on both sides. Those are the people who are fighting. Black Lives Matter has I've never seen Black Lives Matter be violent, except for when there were riots, which the media called were rebellions, and were largely peaceful. But Black Lives Matter weren't the generators of that violence. They were marching peacefully to stop police violence on being attended on black people. There were people mixed in with Black Lives Matter who were going in there to sow anarchy and discord and burn businesses and smash windows and turn over cars and firebomb and things like that. That wasn't Black Lives Matter. So the point I'm trying to make here is that these two groups wanted to fight. We should have let them fight. Let them kill each other for all I care.
Hey, I love all three perspectives. With that said, again, I only have Maria for a short period of time. Justice, I'm guessing you have something to say to what you just heard Shelly say, but I'm going to start with you, Maria, and I wanted to ask, if you will, if you can respond to Shelly if you choose, but I also want to amend it because you mentioned this in your opening statement. Heather Heyer, I thought, made a very poignant Facebook post that is up on Mental to it. For anybody out there listening, I highly recommend you see the post, and also reposted it on Mental. A unique perspective, and you said it during your response about even the idea of having allies. So we have a Shelly who's saying we shouldn't even be in this fight. So, hey, don't see it as important, but at the same time, let's figure out who our allies are. And quite often when these type of things go on as an African-American community, we're out here like, oh, we're all alone again. And your post just kind of reminded, at least from my perspective, that that's not always the case. So I wanted to at least give you an opportunity to highlight that before you're off the air, as well as, again, you can respond to anything you just heard as well. So go ahead, Maria.
Sure. So, yes, as I said earlier, that I probably didn't say this, but I'm really a humanist. So don't get me wrong. I'm, proud to be black. I advocate for black liberation and progression and all of that, but I am also a humanist. And with that, we don't believe in a certain ethnic group having some sort of superiority, which is something that I oftentimes hear in the black conscious space. Of course, this is not exclusive to the black conscious space, but because I am a black woman and I am deeply entrenched in, black liberation and things like that, I do hear this often, that we are the quote-unquote chosen people. As a humanist, I cannot agree with that. I do not agree with it. And this is with the tragic death of Heather, who I did read about. And to Justice's point, Justice made a great point when he said that, there are people who pose as our allies, but then they turn around and they don't really push policy on our behalf or anything like that. Absolutely true. And this was not the case with Heather, though. I would consider Heather an actual ally, because as I read more information about her, she was working with a African-American guy at her job. And her boyfriend at one point, some guy that she was dating, had made a remark that she felt was racist with regard to her black coworker, and she actually dumped the guy. So this is somebody who didn't just, she didn't get out there and protest, or did not decry racism or, discrimination when it was convenient for her, when everyone else was doing it. This is somebody who actually walked the walk and talked the talk, and to the point of actually ending a relationship with somebody that was a bigot. So I do believe I am a huge advocate of us not pushing away our allies. One issue that I see with us, with black people, and this is not to generalize, again, this is just within the spaces that I am involved in. Oftentimes I hear black people say, oh, we're by ourselves, we don't have any allies. And I'll say, well, why can't we connect with our West African roots? Why can't we connect with those people? Oh, those people don't care about us. They don't like us. And that's just not true. I am actively involved in an organization called the Africa Business Academy, in which we work directly with dignitaries in West African nations who are very much interested in people within the diaspora, especially black Americans, coming to their country, forming partnerships. I personally know a sister in Houston, Texas, who through this group met with the Ghanaian Chamber of Commerce, and as a result has formed a partnership where she's doing a whole skincare line, and all of her ingredients are coming directly from Ghana. So it's just not true. And we've even had a ministry, I think he was the Ministry of Finance, don't quote me on this, but we did have someone in government from Ghana say he wants more black Americans to come to the nation. He wants more of us to get involved in commerce and to network with them and do things like that. So this whole notion that we have nobody and we can't even reach back out to our West African roots, it's a lie. It's a myth. And so, again, as a humanist, I just I am advocating for us to be more receptive to allies, but again, to Justice's point, I do believe we do need to be a bit more judicious with looking into the backgrounds and actually making sure that people who claim that they are allies are actually putting in that work. Now, with that being said, what does that mean? Because, again, you know, we get so defensive sometimes. As soon as someone comes into the community and they're saying that they want to help, we're automatically writing them off and proclaiming that they're part of COINTELPRO or something like that. We have to be a little more open and receptive and not be so guarded. And I understand why we're guarded, but I definitely think we, in order for us to progress in this nation, we don't have the numbers in terms of population. We don't have the numbers in terms of money. So we really are not in a position whatsoever to forge any war or anything of that nature and actually win. So unless you just want to fight just to fight and say that you're doing it, there's really no point in us even having a real discussion about progression and black liberation, the dismantling of systemic racism, until we reach out to allies and actually accept them and work with them. So with all of that being said, again, I want to say that I agree with what Justice said with regard to us, you know, making sure that we choose the right allies. And, yeah, I'm a humanist, so I'm all in. I'm all in for allies.
To me, this is the beauty of mental dialogue. Well, you know, people tuned in, and we're talking about Charlottesville, but here we're talking about this aspect that I think is you spoke to, Maria. I will say in agreement with you, because quite often when people hold positions or belief that it's us per se, is my opinion, and I'll allow people to call in and offer a different one as well. But what I often find is that yet to study, to, and I'm not talking about just our history alone, but just history through the world, you see groups throughout the past, if they've been isolated through geography or by choice, they eventually are behind all those who are interacting. And even Martin Luther King, there is in where we, you know, those of us who know more than that, even Martin Luther King felt like he had made a mistake, not focused on the economics, but even at that point when he owned up to that mistake, he always specifically how necessary strategic alignment at the time of his life where he's now refocusing the approach, you know. So, and again, studying the entire history, so I hear what you're saying, you know, with a global world. So, Justice, real quick, we're going to keep the Queen on for a couple of minutes. If you can kind of address what she had to respond before we let her go, and then, you know, with you and Shelley, what Shelley had to say. But any thoughts about Maria's levels? But I wanted to at least let her hear your.
Yeah, well, I thank you. And Maria, I think I agree with you on many different levels. I'm out here in Seattle, Washington, where the state is less than 4% black. So I have to interact with white folks. And I'm not saying that as in, oh, I have to, as in it's a chore. Those are the people who are in my community, the people who I'm around. And so I have been, since I was in high school and getting followed home from skinheads, I have been talking to people about we have to pay attention and actually make changes to the system. We have to dismantle this white supremacy system. And it's been on deaf ears, and it's been on deaf ears, and it's been on deaf ears. And the frustration level is to the point now where I'm 40 years old, and over 58% of white people voted in someone who was talking like he was George Wallace from the 1960s. And so when someone says, when I have anger, when I have upset over what is happening, when I'm getting upset, when people are not listening to what we're saying, and then the things that we're saying are coming to be, then I'm not here to like tone police myself. I'm not here to let someone step into a conversation when they just found out about white supremacy last Tuesday and want to talk to me about the tactic that I've been using to help bring people forward for the last 30 years. So I absolutely do think that we need allies, But an ally is not a self-appointed person. An ally is not somebody who, well, if you said that wrong to me, then I just don't actually believe in black people having rights anymore. That's not an ally. An ally is someone like Heather Heyer, who was on the front lines, who was willing to take the same kind of circumstances, the same kind of consequences that the people that she was fighting for out there, and she ended up giving her life in what she actually believed in moving things forward. That is an ally. Someone who's like, well, I'm going to go march because it's the thing to do today, but 2 weeks from now, I don't even remember what you were talking about, and I'm going to go on about my life. I'm not going to invest in anything that you're doing. I'm not going to help to multiply your voice out there, because it isn't multiplied. And I, as a black man here in this state, I have to be very aware that the fact that me speaking so strongly against white supremacy impacts my ability to make money. It does impact my ability. And so I have to, but I'm done kind of soft shoeing in order to make people stay comfortable, because when white people are comfortable, when the power majority are comfortable, they do not move. And we have seen throughout history that the only thing that has ever got them to move is when there's a hit to their pocketbook, or there's something that is so morally reprehensible that they can't even turn away from it anymore.
Hey, good thoughts. Let me go to Maria real quick before we let her go. Any last thoughts from you? It could be a response to Justice or anything that you want to get out on this conversation for this evening before you go. Thank you again for being with us, Maria. Any last thoughts from you? Thank you so much.
You can't stay a couple minutes longer.
What's that? I'm sorry.
Maria, we got a request to keep you on. Request to keep you on.
I could probably swing it until about 10:40 Eastern.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Well, you want to jump in real quick, Shelly, since she's going to stay? You want to jump in?
Go ahead. Let Shelly jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Shelly. Yeah. Go ahead, Shelly.
Well,
yeah, jump
well,
in
just,
real quick.
I just think that I'm hearing a lot, and some of it I agree with, some of it naturally I don't agree with. When I hear, the most beautiful thing I heard was when the sister said, about supremacy and stuff and not believing, I'm one of those people also. There's no one supreme to me. There's no one better than me. There's no one, even with my flaws and my great mistakes that I've made in my life, there's no one supreme to me. And I never use those words because it's true. There's no one supreme to me except for my God, of course. And so when I hear people talking like that, when I hear people saying, for 30 years we've been fighting for freedom, and my question is, what are you not free to do today? What is it that you cannot do by any constitutional right or anything? Is there any place that you can't go, or is there any school that you can't attend? Is there any job that you can't get? What are you not free to do? And I think a lot of the rhetoric that we talk about are these, it's almost like everybody saw the black and whites from the 60s, and now we're trying our best to live that time again. And it's not that time again. And, no, these white supremacists, these guys, these white neo-Nazis, according to the experts, Southern Poverty Leadership Committee, according to them, there's like 10,000 of these people, 10,000 in a country of 350 million people. So let's assume that there are many who believe what they do, but they're undercover. You're still less than 0.1% of the population that are truly heinous white supremacist neo-Nazi types. And that's the truth. But yet we're going to stand around here because of what happened in Charlotte, and we're going to have this great debate, and we're going to have pundits on TV crying, grown-ass men crying on TV because they're scared now of people that have been here, by everyone's admission, for the last 40, 50, 60, 70 years. They never went away. They weren't hiding during Barack's time. If these people hated Barack so much because he was a black president, they wouldn't have been hiding for two terms. They would have come out and voted him out in the second term. But he won twice. It's kind of hard to convince me that all these people put Donald Trump into office because the black guy won twice, but they weren't able to stop the black guy from winning a second time.
I tossed the first time because maybe they didn't think he didn't have a chance because he was black, and that racism would go so far to tell them that. But after the first time, all these people that came out to vote for Trump and elected Trump were there and allowed the black guy to get elected a second time. Come on, the numbers don't add up. So, one, we should stop talking about it. We should stop phrasing it that way and talking about us being such victims. Right now in our country right now, black people are yelling and screaming at a foe, an enemy. That's not screaming back. And that's how it's been for the last 10 years. We're up in cops' faces at protests. We cursing cops out. They're not screaming back. We going down, walking down in California to protest.
They're shooting people at a disproportionate rate. So yeah, they're not talking back. They're not fighting back. Like they have.
They have guilt now. All right. What you're up against now is white guilt. And I'm going to tell you something. You may fear white racism. Trust me when I tell you, you don't want to fear. The greatest fear and the greatest enemy of black people going forward in the next 20 years is going to be white guilt. And the reason why that is because white guilt is going to allow pathologies in the black community to grow unchecked because they don't want to say anything. And that's what's going to start to happen. I'd rather deal with the white racist because I know what his mindset is. The white man is guilty for what his ancestors did, or the white man that doesn't want to say anything when you jump up in his face and shout him down and tell him he can't speak at this college, that guy is much more dangerous than the racist.
All right, let's jump in. Let me jump in because we got Maria for 5 minutes, and Justice, I'll definitely let you get back in. He talks about, in a sense, what Shelley had to say, maybe in response to you or just what he had to say. Let's get your thoughts before we let you go, Maria.
Yeah, definitely. So, Shelley, when you inquire about, specifically what are black people discussing when we talk about, being oppressed and having to face discrimination, I mean, the things that come to my mind immediately are the school-to-prison pipeline, mass incarceration, food deserts in predominantly black neighborhoods, redlining, glass ceilings in corporate America that, that whole concept basically grew out of how black people were being capped in their positions. I mean, there are tons of settlements over racial discrimination from Pepsi to Merrill Lynch to Denny's. I mean, Macy's.
There's a case right now at Goldman Sachs, a lady suing because of the same thing. I'm not talking about those things. That's not what white supremacy
is. What are you talking
is.
About?
And that's what I'm talking about. Well, let me. No, it's not. That's
okay,
here
it is.
Totally
don't jump in, Montoy. I got to let her finish.
Oh, okay.
Because she was speaking.
She's going
to
stay a little longer.
I got to let the queen get to bed. So I'm going to put this. Go ahead, Maria. Finish up. And if I can even say the same thing they're saying, I think, as you just mentioned, those are what we get a definition out there when we say white supremacy. You can challenge that after she finishes. Go ahead, Maria.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, that's my point. I mean, it's, to your point, though, Shelley, yelling at individual cops themselves, especially those who have not been guilty of, the horrendous crimes that some of these cops have done to innocent black lives. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty mute thing or whatever I'm trying to say. It doesn't serve a greater purpose. But systemically, as I mentioned, with the school-to-prison pipeline and all of these other systemic issues that black Americans are disproportionately affected by, yeah, that's what we're talking about. Those things have to be dismantled. They have to be challenged.
And who
it will
dismantles
be
them?
Of us
let her finish, Shelley.
It would be remiss of us to say that just because we are no longer wearing shackles, even though, I mean, I can certainly attest to that not necessarily being true because my father is part of this very mass incarceration system that I was speaking of, but although we are not all, being sold and things like that, it does not mean that racism or systemic racism has vanished. It, in fact, it is actually more insidious now. Like, now we have people like you who are saying that, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with us. What can we not do nowadays, when I can think of a million things without really even giving it much effort that we are going through right now that our ancestors went through as well? And it's just that now the system has gotten so clever. The system has gotten so clever now that it has people like you fooled into believing that we actually have freedom that we don't have.
I think that, can I answer now? First of all, I think
I want to make sure she's going.
Maria,
thank you very much. I know I need to let you go, so I wanted to give you a send off. But thank you for those thoughts.
Thank you so much for having me. And great discussion with both of you guys, Shelley and Justin. Such a pleasure meeting you and discussing this with
you. Great meeting you all. I hope to meet you in person one day.
Yes, likewise.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Queen. Shelley, I need you to make it quick because Justin to you as well. We didn't allow him to do that.
I just want to say quick response. I just want to say,
go ahead, Shelley.
School to prison pipeline is something we can fix. See, the things that she mentioned are all problems, but they are problems that we can fix. The school to prison pipeline is something fixable by us, because for most of those school systems that those kinds of problems exist in, and I'm not saying that they don't exist in cities that are fully run by black people. So we can fix the school to prison pipeline. And when the white man put forth a plan, saying, hey, well, why don't we have these charter schools? That might work. We shut those down. We don't want nothing to do with them. When he comes around, he says, hey, what about vouchers where you could take your public school money that the government gives you and you could take it to another school? Oh, you're trying to get other people rich. Well, who cares who gets rich if my kid is not going to prison? I mean, I think that there are things out there. It's fixable. Now, if it's a white
all right, let me let Justice
system,
respond, and then we'll let you get back and forth.
Okay.
All right, Justice, I know you wanted to get in.
Yeah, well, one of the big issues is that we live in a world where money is the gateway to all other resources. And wealth over time has been funneled up to a very few people and kept from the majority of folks. Now, yes, you're trying to say that this thing in North Carolina
is... That's not a black problem.
Let him finish, though. You got to let him finish, Shelley. You have to let him finish. We let you finish.
Okay.
You have to let him finish.
Sorry.
Thank you. So you're saying that this thing in Virginia is poor white trash versus their elite masters. But if you understand whiteness, you understand that it is an economic system, and it was created very specifically to separate folks and to make sure that the lowest white thought that he always had more than the highest black. And so you
That's
cannot
only in this country.
Separate.
That's only
can,
in this
can
country.
Can I please finish, dude?
Sorry.
Dude, can
Sorry.
I finish?
Sorry.
Thank you. Okay, so you cannot separate the blackness and economics. Okay, so when we talk about wealth, my family had the first automobile in Alabama, and the white folks came in and voted and said no cars on the main streets. Okay, my family was at the turn of the century, we had land in Louisiana, was farming, had a canning company. A mob came and burnt it to the ground. No police ever found anything like that. When land was being given to white farmers, and where wealth in this country really comes from land ownership, so they're giving it to white people, and then they're keeping it from black folks, and then they're putting black folks into these little red line states so you can only be here, and then they're cutting off all resources to them, and then poisoning them with lead in their water, and you want to know why there's a problem with how behavior challenges. So for you to sit there and say that, oh, everything is great, we got the right to vote 60-something years ago, and now everything is great and all this history and all this Jim Crow laws and everything is gone, is actually very obtuse. It is callous, and I think that it is speaking to your internalized oppression.
All right, let me let Shelley.
I'm oppressed internally. So since I'm oppressed internally, my oppression tells me, your family had land at the turn of the century and it was burned down. Was there any effort by the family to get new land? Because quite honestly, that was possible. So if there wasn't, because you can buy land now. As a matter of fact, the whole West End went for sale not 3 years ago, and you can buy as much land as you want to if you have the resources. So if you don't have the resources.
If you have the resources, where do you get those resources
right,
from, Shelly?
And that's
well,
the key. That's
Shelly.
The, and here it is, Shelly. Shelly, let me say this too.
You have to get the resources. Wait, hold on. You have to get the resources the same way.
Shelly, I'm cutting you off for a second, brother, because I want you to just give thought to it. When you say, if you had the resources, if you're going to be completely of why those resources don't exist, his point and what I think all together, like if you make your point without addressing why the resources are not there, generally speaking, as a community, not an individual here or there. If you're gonna over that part, you're skipping over what he's talking about completely. I just want to get a thought out because you jump in. You're gonna have. Go ahead, brother.
Hello.
Brother.
I'm just saying. I didn't.
Because you were cutting in, I wanted to make sure you understood.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, but I did not sugarcoat what he said. I completely understand the history of black people in this country. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about now is the solution to moving forward. Because what is being done now, what we're talking about that's being done now, has been talked about, has been pushed. We're not the first generation to march in the streets. We're not the first generation to rise up and speak truth to power. We're not the first. Justice is not the first guy to have a movement that he's working with to get people to talk to white people about changing their ways and getting allies. This is not the first time that we've done this. And any thought of that is obtuse, to use your word. So the point I'm trying to make is, at what point do we turn and we change our strategy? At what point do we realize that resources are gained through a good education? Resources are gained through learning, being learned. Resources are trained through being trained to gain resources. We're fighting out here. We're developing a whole generation of social activists. Far as I can tell, you can't make any money being a social activist. But that's what we have on the streets right now. So at what point do we focus on that which what we need? You said money is the key to the resources. So why don't we pull ourselves back from these marches, pull ourselves back from yelling at people, pull ourselves back the resources? Because the resources are right there. One thing about capitalism.
Where, Shelly? Where are the resources at?
Well, let's see. Right now, if you had put $3,000 into the money market account in January 19th, in August, that $3,000 would be roughly around 7, maybe 65, 7, in a simple market money market account. Pretty good growth. But for the last 7 months, we've been running around. Pretty good growth. And any financial advisor, my numbers may be wrong for you guys out there running your calculators right now. But my point is, there's a way to get resources. There is a way to make money. The white man hasn't stopped you from making money. And if he has stopped you from making money, then marching in the streets is not the answer. The only answer, if the man is taking your money and stopping you from getting resources, then the only answer is what the infatada is doing. That's the only answer. Take it. That's the only answer.
Okay, so Shelly, what percentage of...
All right, now, let him respond completely. Let him respond. Shelly.
What percentage of venture capital funds go to black-owned businesses, Shelly? Do you have any idea?
You have to tell me
less than 1%.
Yeah, that's an easy number to throw out there, but you have to tell me what percentage of black-owned businesses are seeking venture capital. That's what you have to answer first.
You can't guarantee me nothing, sir.
You can't guarantee me nothing. If you're going to throw out a statistic, you have to have the corresponding statistic that you threw out. I didn't bring it up. You did. So if you're going to tell me the percentages of black businesses that get venture capital is 1%, you have to also know what percentages of black businesses are seeking venture capital.
Okay, I will agree with you on that. And I don't have that number, and I'll get that number for future reference.
Now, when you tell me that number is 40, 50.
Let him finish now. Let him finish, Shelly. Let him finish. He's already conceded. He's already conceded. He's already conceded. Let him finish his point.
Thank you. Okay, so you have we live in a world where if you have a black sounding name, you are 50% less likely to even get a callback for an interview. Okay, we live in a world where the people who are in charge are still white males, and they still are the ones who are making choices on how people move up. You asked me what can I not do? So I am also a non-heterosexual male. So it was illegal for me to be in the military. So it is. There are. If we can understand for something like that, okay, where there is a law on the books that actually keeps people from doing what they do, there are these unwritten laws that still impact Black Americans today, and then it affects, you know, who gets promotions, who gets access to funds, who gets invited into investment groups. So this is the thing that we're talking about. And when you're also talking about what you sound a lot like the older generation who's mad at the millennials for not going out there and getting jobs when the marketplace has been changed by things that happened in the past that affect the marketplace today. And that's the exact same thing that's going on.
But the thing is,
so when you keep funds from people,
you'll be able to respond. Let him finish.
Okay, when this last bubble, this last real estate bubble impacted black folks and people of color more than anyone else, so that opportunity for them to have wealth was disappeared, and most people are living paycheck to paycheck, you're saying, hey, well, if you put $3,000 into this, then it would have grown to that. Well, there are white people have like, there's like, what is it, 60%, I'm not sure on this number, but maybe Montoya knows that. Their entire net worth is like 200 times more than.
I'll say it. I'm gonna let Shelly go after this. The number that you're about to speak is the median wealth number, which is about 14,000. And if you take away our cars, ours goes below 10,000. So that is.
But that's not because of recent.
You're gonna get to speak, Shelly. All I want to say is. I'm going to let Shelly respond. So, the case, because of recent decisions, historical things that we're speaking of, go ahead, Shelly.
What I'm saying is, I don't dispute that. I do dispute the numbers because it's just like any other number that you want to be bad, right? If you're looking at 300 million versus 13 million, you're going to have a higher median household income because you're going to have more people working because you're comparing whole numbers to each other. So the people come out there, they look at 290 million white folks, and they say, what's your median household net worth? And they get $50,000, which is mostly tied up into their home. And then they go to 13 million or 30-something million black folks and say, what's your income tied to? Well, I'm renting, so I don't have much of a median household income. It's not apples to apples. Compare the black lawyer with the white lawyer, and you get a closer number. Compare the white.
That's not true.
High school.
No.
You're going to get
a closer number at all.
It's not. The median net worth will be a closer number. But my point is this. I don't want to get bogged down in that argument. My point is this. At a certain point, we have to understand that if we believe this is a white supremacist system that has its foot on our neck, at a certain point, we have two choices. Either we're going to snatch the foot and cut it off and keep it moving, and if the next foot gets put on our neck, we're going to snatch the foot and cut it off. Or we're going to remove ourselves from that position, never to be put there again. But laying there with the foot on our neck, yelling and screaming up at a guy that we admit to ourselves doesn't care about us, about how unfair he's treating us, seems to me to be folly. And we've been chasing that same pattern for the last 60 years. And at this point, someone's got to stand up and say, hey, why don't we try and do something different? Let's just try and do something different. Let's
and the reason you consider it folly is because
We're still arguing the same thing.
The way that he's saying it.
Well, no, because we're still arguing the same thing. That's why.
No,
it's not just, you believe it's systemic.
We're not.
I'm telling, we're arguing the same thing. He started, Mr. Justice started the whole conversation by saying, still fighting for freedom. We're saying, if you're saying, logically speaking, if you're saying you're fighting the same things and we've all been fighting it, and he said for 30 years he's been doing it, if you're doing the same thing for 30 years and you're still fighting these still bad schools, you're still fighting these still unemployed jobs, and you're still fighting this racism and this white supremacy, as you call it, then at a certain point you've got to wake up and say, I've got to fight it differently. That's it. That's all people like me are saying. We're not saying you're wrong. We're not saying there is no white supremacy. We're not saying there is no racism. I'm just challenging you on your strategy that you're using to fight something that has been there for the last 300 years. And we've never decided to fight it in a different way.
Because you spend time suggesting that you haven't heard the strategy. Go ahead, Justice.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, I'm not going to be out there protesting anything. I'm not protesting the Nazis. To me, that's white folks' problem. And it's a white folk problem, and they need to be the ones out there doing that. So, you know, I understand the Fergusons. I understand that. I understand that you have to damage property to get white folks, the powered white folks, to care enough to change policy. And I understand
I just got to ask this question. Please let me cut you off real quick, and please allow me to be rude. I'm sorry. When we did that, we had a black man in president, black attorney general, black people all in the White House. When we did that, did anything change? Did the white folks wake up and see?
What happened in Ferguson? The answer to that question
Congress.
Is yes. No, forget it. Don't even take it to national level. Do not take it to national level. Very few people followed Ferguson a year later. It has changed. Because those young activists kept covering the media to have a, again, I'm not saying did they change out that entire department? Go do the. Get the
is it the mayor still
what
there?
We talked about.
The mayor is still there, isn't he?
In place. Yeah, the mayor is still in place.
Yeah. The police chief's still there? Yeah, he's still there. Even though the Justice Department told him that what he was doing was completely unconstitutional, he's still there. My point is, he said that sometimes you got to break windows for white people to notice. And I said, we broke windows in Ferguson with a black president, with a black attorney general, and nothing changed.
That's
and
not true.
Breaking
and
windows,
not true that nothing
changed. Did change. And we're both saying that it did change.
That's not true.
And I'm also saying that we're saying that it did change.
I'm trying to listen to see what those changes were.
Hey,
and none of you can tell me what those
glad
changes
to do that.
Were.
Well, I just told
show.
You they changed out the. Okay, hold on. They changed out the entire department. You came up with the mayor with the vote to. I don't know if the vote has come up in that time period, but as far as those activists, what they
is.
Are
it was,
happy about.
4 years ago.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah, so what I'm saying
city council races too.
And
so what is,
there have
what
been
is
significant
solution,
changes made.
Deli, is
there are significant.
Your solution. What's your solution? Your solution is that people who have been historically cordoned off from having funds need to take these funds and make more funds when they don't have access.
I say,
to the same. What is your plan?
I say historically. My plan is to do historically what every other minority group has ever done, and that is go inside yourselves, meaning go inside your communities, turn within, don't worry about what was going on from the outside, turn within and build from within. That's what my strategy is. That's what I advocate.
Yeah,
turn
and here it is. If you learn to listen, you'll find
out
that we're advocating the same thing, but you're dismissive of a problem that wasn't created from within. You can't
no
address
problems.
It
Most problems are not created were from within. Simple day-to-day problems that people go through that are devoid of all white supremacy and racism and all that shit, just simple bullshit that people go through, were not created from within. Most of life's problems are created from without. The white boy that works at Jiffy Lube can tell you all the problems he's having. They don't have nothing to do with him being white, poor, graduating high school, none of that. Some of them are not from within. Most problems are not from within, and most problems are fixable. If your idea is that
justice will tell you for what he does for a living, will probably actually say the opposite of that based on who you help. Justice, what are your thoughts about most or not? Because most problems are with it from within for an individual. At least that's my perspective, but you do that for a living. What do you think, Justice?
Yeah, well, I absolutely think that most problems are within. How we see ourselves, how we see ourselves in the world, and a large part of that is the media that we see. That the only time that we see black people, they're in violent positions. They're either athletes, they're on the news being thugs, or they're cops on television. It's always from a place of violence, and so we're seeing that. We're starting to internalize those things, and what happens is you either internalize it and you take on those stereotypes because you think, oh, that's what blackness is, and that's the only way I can get along, and that's how I have to be black, or you move to the other side where you start to want to be more like in line with this white supremacy. And if I say this, and if I take on this, and if I say it's not racism, and if I say it has nothing to do, just pull yourselves up by the bootstraps, even though the families that you're dealing with are dealing with generations of wealth. And so what white supremacy is one, you don't have to say sorry, and two, you can make mistakes. So you can go make a mistake, go back to daddy and say, hey, daddy, I need $20,000 for my thing, because they have wealth over time that has been built up based on
the
system.
That's fine. There's nothing you're going to do about that. But there's nothing you're going to do about that. You're not going to take the man's wealth that he's built up over time. You're not going to tax it from him. You're not going to remove it from him. So that's a done deal. That man accumulated
wealth.
They
absolutely did that. No, that's absolutely what they did. That's what they did to move out of the Great Recession.
That's what I'm saying.
They taxed the crap out of the wealthy.
And then they made a
safety net for everyone underneath, and then they kept black people for it. So what has to happen, and I agree with Maria, what has to happen is you have to have reparations. You have to bring money, the money that is owed, the money that was stolen, the money that was kept from the black community. You have to bring it back into the black community before you start telling them to go invest in stuff.
That's fair. I mean, if that's what we're going to wait for, then, again, you know, like I say all the time, my general feeling is to look within and do for self, and fuck what these people are doing to us or have done to us. And that's really the only thing. Because what you're saying now are fights that you're going to wage for the next 100 years. And 100 years from now, we're going to live in a totally different world. What they're talking about, billionaires are now talking about a universal pay wage because there won't be any jobs. So the question that has to be asked of us, as we have this conversation now, as they're planning, because when they start talking about something, it's not an idea. It's an idea. It's a talk for them to get you used to this idea. And so when they do this idea, what are you going to get out of it? Are you going to be paid the same as Pookie? Is Pookie going to be paid the same as Holyo? Or is the poor white dude doing the Jiffy Lube oil change, is he going to get the same, or is he going to get more because of white supremacy? When they start talking about a universal wage. My point to you, brother, is that the things that you're talking about are all true. They're all true. But I argue or debate the strategy in which we're trying to fight something that is right around a corner. And my answer to this fight that's right around a corner is to go within and build from within. If you're telling me that we don't have the wherewithal and we need resources from the white man that we call racist and white supremacists to give us the resources in order to create the things that we need or the things that we should have that's like him, that's a fool's game. Because if he's a white supremacist and a racist, he's never going to give it to you. If he's that, he's not going to give it to you. Strong thought, Justice, and we'll go ahead and move the show.
But go ahead. I want to give you a good response.
Most of the white people around me say that they are not white supremacists. Okay? So most of them say that they're not. And so if they're not, and if they understood the system that was in place that kept wealth from a community, that was put in place to intentionally keep power. And I mean, I was born 11 years after black folks could vote. And so if you think that we have any kind of political power in just 6 years that the folks have been trying to keep us out of power, then that's just silly.
When you were born 11 years after black people could vote in the South, black people were voting across the country. Only in the South were they not voting, were they not allowed to vote. But all across the country, they were allowed to vote. So where you're talking about was where they weren't allowed to vote. It was in one portion of the country. So it wasn't like black people in California and New York, they were voting. My grandfather was voting in the 20s. So, and he's in New York. So this idea that black people didn't vote.
They let people vote, and they also had significant voters. They're still doing voter suppression right now. They're still moving things around so the black vote counts less than the other one. And that's the thing that you.
Let me jump in here. I'm going to jump in right here. We'll allow a lot of the thoughts to go, which is what we do on Mental Dialogue. I think there's a lot of thoughts that have been given. I want to ask a quick question. Listen to this conversation go back and forth. So as I hear you, Justice, kind of speak to the idea of you're saying you're in colleagues who are saying that, that being made aware of what's happened might, in a sense, assist in changing things. Shelley is correct that there won't be enough to assist in changing things and for how to affect change to a certain extent in what I think he's asking. So in a sense, I'm going to pull you back on after I say this question. So I'm just kind of repeating it to get it clear. So if, in fact, because you even said it's hard to find those true allies, if you find that those allies are limited, to the extent that they're unable to the system, what would be your solution if you can't rely on them? I want to kind of just hear your perspective, because I could, for certain, like, that's an ask, and I'll kind of both your thoughts after that, after you answer that. Go ahead.
I need you to ask that question.
Justice, you're back on.
You're going in and out on my end.
Okay, sorry. So let me shorten it. Basically, that the colleagues that you're saying, because you, when he asked you, Shelley said, I want to go. If we're saying that the white supremacists will never give it to you, your initial response that you said, saying that they themselves are not white supremacists, and you were mentioning that if they were aware of it, they in a sense might help you. Find that there are not enough allies, the quote unquote white community, and there, and you, do you have a solution if you can't, kind of in a sense challenge and ask slightly different way than what I hear Shelley asking. But do you understand what I'm saying? Like, what if you find you don't have enough allies? What do you think, like, approach it at that point?
Well, personally, what I think, I believe that there are more than enough allies if they were not being blinded by the system, which is a white
system. The question too that I'm asking you is, if there are not, what would be your response if you find, if you were to find that you were wrong? And I'm not even disagreeing with what question to just have you think about it from a, that there are not. Well, you know, I may be there. That you find that they are not, what would be your, do you have a thought process for that?
What if there's a not,
if you find that there are
to change the system,
you're thinking. Mm-hmm.
What do you do if there's not enough allies to change the system? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm just trying to put you on the spot. What would be and that? What would, is there a solution?
Yeah.
And you're,
we're doing it live on that. Yeah, so
if
you're trying to tell me that if there's nothing that is ever going to happen to change the, what I believe is a system of white supremacy that impacts every single institution in this country, and am I just going to sit here? No. at that point in time, then I will probably snap. It will probably become a militant thing. I will probably accept the declaration of war against my people, and it will be war.
Here we go. Let me jump in, because that's not very specific, and I'm challenging you in very specific. But just in my opinion, deeper. I didn't suggest to you.
You're going in and out. I'm having a really hard time hearing you.
Okay. I didn't suggest to you that there's nothing that can be done to change white supremacy.
Okay.
What I asked you specifically, cannot have enough allies in the white community per se. If you find that there are not enough allies, do you have a solution? Because if your solution is to be militant at 13%, then that's suicide. Like whether, and even if you would commit to that, that's, in my opinion, is not a solution. So do you have a solution if you were to find there are not enough allies? And that could be your answer. But I will tell you that's suicide if that is going to be your response to that question.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about with what I thought you were asking the question. And if you're asking me if there's not enough, I guess I'm not understanding really what you're asking me.
The question is very simple. If you do that. If you, because you believe,
you currently believe
that there are enough allies. That if you said you think there are enough allies that if you pull the wool from over their eyes, that they would in fact change the system. My question is, if you find there are not enough allies, what would you do? You there is a solution then? If your answer is to respond militantly in a place where we're highly outnumbered in the way that we are, I will tell you personally that seemed like a solution. I do believe that there are solutions similar to some of what Shelley's responding to. I think there are solutions outside of even not finding enough allies. But I wanted to hear your thought process. Do you have a thought process if you find that there are not enough allies? Specifically, that is the question.
Well, I would pull completely out of the system. I believe that capitalism kind of breeds this and creates this. I pull out of the system. There's plenty of sustainable, there's ways that you can go off the grid and live a sustainable life, and it would be me and my family taking care of our own, and I wouldn't be engaged with the system. And it's just what I'm trying to do is I understand that people are connected. We live in a very connected world. So the seeds are just ridiculous. What we have to deal with reality right now, what reality is that we are a more connected world than we ever have been before, that we are becoming globalized, that people are being educated, and there is a pushback. And so I don't particularly see what's happening right now as it's going backwards. I feel like what was happening is we are moving forward, breaking through a paradigm into one, and it's the last bastions of an old dying paradigm. So I will keep doing what I'm doing. I will keep pushing on people. I will keep bringing attention to what happens when you talk to people about it, when you allow them to see, when their eyes come open, you become actual allies. So I don't really like hypothetical because I don't see that as a reality.
Well, you don't know it's a hypothetical. You think that there are enough allies. Maybe they're not. You think that there are enough allies is a hypothetical. If you're going to call
you don't need everyone to be an ally.
You yourself said you think that there are enough. That's still a hypothesis. Anything, if they're not enough, is not a just out of the air hypothesis. It's a response to your thought, and I wanted to hear your answer. And your answer was you will go off the grid. I will tell you, to a certain extent, that's already Shelley's response. Believing that he doesn't have enough allies, he says go within and do it yourself. That is almost a go off the grid approach. Again, it's just going deep. It's my perspective, not strict. It's kind of, I hope you understand kind of how I'm challenging that it wasn't a hypothesis when you offered. I just said, what if they're not? Both of those are hypotheses. You think they are, some people think they're not. So, and I just wanted you to realize that there's a common ground in all of what we've been doing tonight.
Yeah,
whether we realize it or not, there's common ground.
No, Well, I believe there's common ground. A lot of things that Shelley say, I'm not saying I disagree. I'm like, I understand. Yeah, it's like, we should do it. We got to do it. Black people have to be educated. Black people have to understand about being entrepreneurs and how to collaborate and work with one another. And that's all well and good, but if the resources are cut off to the community, then the community is going to die. So you have to get the resources out. You have to be able to connect to something outside of your community in order to get resources.
It's all respectable, brother. I thank you for your time. Again, I think we've done it different. This is not the, in reference to Charlottesville. That's why it was worth it, in my opinion, to do this on Mental Dialogue and the ideas to keep focused, keep about that and gather that. Again, I think all of us agree tonight that, in a sense, well, you definitely say it's like it sparks an opportunity to become focused, whereas I know myself, my brother Shelley, he had to go this evening or whatever. So thank you for your thoughts. I think it's well worth it. Again, a lot of thoughts that that needed to be visited, and I hope people got something out of it. We didn't open up the phone lines tonight, but thank you very much for coming on this evening, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate you always. Montoya, have a great one.
All right, thank you very much. See y'all Saturday morning. Regular schedule time for the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. If you are, you do have live experience this Friday. The smartest event in the city. Please come out at Urban Grind, 7 p.m. Black-owned coffee shop here in the page to see a flyer promoting it. It's a free event. Please come out. Again, thank you guys for your support. We're going to end with a quick service announcement for how you can be a supporter of the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Hope y'all enjoyed the conversation. I did very much.
My name is Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. I am the owner and facilitator of the Mental Dialogue Community Support Group, focused on practical solutions and the collective thinking of the black community. We do that one of two ways, every third Friday, 7 p.m. at Urban Grind, or Saturday mornings, the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Contact us at mentaldialogue.com or on Facebook at Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think.